Alrighty, friends, we're back for your favorite podcast show of the week. This is Location Weekly. This is episode number 662. And we are recording on March the 26th. Brianna, how are you doing today?
I am doing good. Today is my last day in the office before I take a few days off and head to Florida, just getting to some warmth for a few days. It's my kids' spring break. So I have a lot to look forward to. But yeah, just one last day in, and then gonna take a little breather. So how are you doing? You've had an exciting couple of days.
Yeah, just, the travel continues. Spent the weekend in Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada, where this year was the host of the Juno Awards, which is our Canadian version of the Grammys, let's call it that. So yeah, all the biggest music artists in the country were there, hosted by Nelly Furtado. I don't know if you know who she is, but she hosted it. And yeah, it was like, I think for me, a lot of kind of the up and coming artists that I hadn't heard of, like, just getting exposure to that. I was there for work, through my startup Ground Level Insights. We do, measurement of sponsorships, with our location data. So a lot of the music festivals and things like that. And we have a partnership with the Junos. So that, so it was fun. It was like work and fun all at once. Yeah, I think one of the highlights for me was I got to be at this like late night, kind of like in a hotel suite, basically like just super informal party, like a bunch of like superstars sitting around like in a campfire circle, unplugged, just getting up and doing covers for each
Amazing.
other and just getting to watch that. Like that was kind of crazy. So yeah, so it was fun.
Sounds like a good trip.
Yeah, it was good. And yeah, so, it's, baseball season officially starts later this week. So I'm excited about that. And, the travel continues. We have two retail locos next month around the corner. Yeah. Our European event in Munich, and then our event in Minneapolis at Mall of America. So just go to the lbma.org and check out the events there and get engaged with that. But lots happening. So
for sure.
yeah.
Well, we have a couple of good, well, four good stories as usual this week, and I'm going to kick it off
Do
if
it.
you're ready. All right. Well, let's start off with Google, who is going to release some more location control features for their Chrome operating system. So, as many of you have probably seen, that the camera and microphone controls option that was introduced last year, now you'll have this added location feature so that users can manage their location sharing access for all their apps and services on the Chrome operating system. So this will include Android apps, web apps that are used in Chrome, and some of the background system functions as well. So whenever they update and primarily block Google location services, apps and websites can still use their, generic location from IP geolocation, which, in some ways is a good thing because you want to be able to have that localized offering, the right language settings, all of those things, right? And users are also going to be able to choose which apps can access the features on a case-by-case basis, just to give them more control over their Chromebook privacy. So they have some other features that are rolling out for enterprise customers, secure local data recovery. So, when you forget your password, the Chrome OS is going to require that the users have access to their account and a physical device. Probably many of you already have that feature set up. I know with all of my corporate things, I have to do that kind of double verification. Sometimes it feels like quadruple verification in many cases. And so just like all of these efforts that they're putting around to bolster up their privacy and protection. They also recently rolled out some other real-time URL protection through Google Safe Browsing, improved password management. They've got this like real-time defense against phishing, malware, and other online threats that they're saying is blocking, expected to increase the blocking by an additional 25%. And then they're rolling out another capability to Android this month, which is using encryption and other privacy-enhancing techniques To ensure that no one, including Google, knows what websites you're visiting. So that's kind of nice as well. So I think this is interesting to me because I feel like a lot of times it's Google that I don't want to have my location, you know, like Google has your location all the time, no matter what you do. And I always find it very interesting whenever I visit Google and search for something and it's like, do you want to share your location? And you're like, no, but it's already populated everything based on your location. You're like, well, all the good that did. So I think it's very interesting that they're rolling this out. And I think they're trying to perhaps take advantage of the opportunity of moving into that privacy forefront, with the changes that are happening. Obviously, they're deprecating cookies. We also saw, you know, which I'm sure we'll talk about on a future show, Apple getting their hand slapped this week, and we'll see what the future of that looks like. But I just think that it's interesting that they're very focused on privacy all of a sudden. I don't think this has been like Google's MO from the start because it's been always about like how do I sell more advertising? And obviously by having a user's location, you sell a lot more advertising and you get a lot more context. So we'll see how this rolls out. I'm curious to see how many users actually take the steps and adopt this. I think that the enterprise functionality and the password protection and encryption that they're giving those customers is obviously important, and you just have to keep iterating in those areas. I mean, it's always going to be changing. You know, hackers get smarter, so as a tech company, we have to get smarter too. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot to add to this. I think they're trying to keep up with the times and make sure they have a good PR story to tell. And especially in light of the Apple news. Yeah, I mean, this is something I'm sure they've had in the background working on this for some time now. And as everything that Google does in this in the privacy realm, it's always about PR and positioning and timing. So, they're trying to capitalize on kind of what's going on in the industry today. Yeah, I think the password stuff I think is interesting. I mean, every time I forget my Google password to log into my account, it already tells me to open up my YouTube app or something and to verify that way. So I have that happening to me all the time. Yeah, I think from a consumer point of view, the messaging is good on the privacy stuff. I think from an advertising and business industry point of view, they may get some significant pushback on this because I think that that's where their revenue is coming from, right? So it'll be interesting to see how they compensate for that in terms of where they're going to find the revenue that might be lost from this. So I think that'll be interesting, but time will tell, as they say.
Yeah,
So, all right, well,
always
let's
work
move
that
on.
angle.
Let's move on to our second story now. So, we're going to talk about a band. Speaking of coming from a music award show this weekend, not a Canadian band, a band born in 1990, as part of the whole Seattle sound movement that came out back in those days. Pearl Jam is back on the scene. And I don't know if you're a Pearl Jam fan, Brianna. Were you? Are you? No.
Pearl Jam brings me back to middle school. I gotta say, like, it takes me way back. And I think that, like, then I would say I would have been, you know, of an occasional fan, an occasional listener, but seemed like the
Okay.
groups I ran with were very big Pearl Jam fans. And it's funny because I still see the same guys like posting about Pearl Jam. So, kept up with it 30 years later, you
No.
know.
Well, I'm a little older than you, so I was in university when, we're just starting, I guess. Or tail end of high school, beginning of university. And yeah, so you had, Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and Nirvana and all these bands coming out, with that sound. Anyhow, so they're back at it. They've released a new album, or they're about to release a new album, I should say. There's a sort of a track that's been released so far. The album's called Dark Matter, and as part of that release, they've released a augmented reality app, so fans can experience this. And so basically, you download the app, you point your phone, the camera lens of your phone up into the sky, and you capture AR images that basically unlock, sort of dark matter cover artwork, and unlock clips of some of the songs from the album. So I think it's kind of interesting. This is not their first time that they've done this. Their previous album, they also kind of engaged AR technology to do this, and we're seeing more and more, artists kind of go down this, this route a little bit. But yeah, they have this song called Super Blood Wolf Moon. That was off their 2020 album, and now this thing's called Gigathon. So the interesting, the cover art on this is I think really cool. It's really interesting. It's like kind of like black hole-y, sort of, spiraling off into the abyss, and then in the middle, they've got this sort of cover art in the middle of the hole, I think it's interesting, and I think that, AR technology, we talk about it a lot on the show. I think there are so many different use cases, in terms of what you can do with it. But I think from a music and film and art and culture perspective, I think, that's where, you can get real attention from it, from the consumer. I think, yeah, it's one thing to say, hey, we're scanning our cereal box to unlock, an experience with Tony the Tiger, versus, and that I think to me has, limited engagement, versus you have a fan base for a band, or an actor, in a film or something like that, where you can really, people like to collect things, people like to sort of be part of, that fan experience. And actually, just drawing on, because kind of slightly unrelated, but at the con like, there was a conference component to this music festival I was at this weekend, and one of the speakers, who's from Universal, said, that, when you look at fan engagement today, they sold something like 35 million vinyl records from artists on their label, labels, I should say, to people who don't even own a record player. Okay, like
That's
these are people
crazy.
who are just buying the vinyl as a collectible, the same as they buy a t-shirt or they buy a something else. And so I think augmented reality in this case is creating another channel and an experience for people to, engage with that artist in a different way, and perhaps have something that they can hold on to or collect.
I agree. I think it's a fun experience, honestly. I feel like most of the time I would be like, as you mentioned, when it's like a cereal brand or something else, it's, even with movies at times, it's kind of shallow, right? And the audience may not really grasp it. But I think with music, it's different. And it made me remember that my mom told me when she was growing up, she used to go to like Pink Floyd star shows at the planetarium, where they would like play the record and like whatever, use your imagination on that one. But I think that it was like the immersive experience that you get. And this is sort of bringing that immersive experience to everyone who, is a fan. All you Pearl Jam fans, hopefully check this out. I'd love to, I'm going to try and check it out and see how it is. And I think it's fun just connecting with your audience. It provides like another point. And I think music is something obviously you hear, you feel it, but now being able to kind of see it and add another sense to it is really cool. All right, so we're going to switch gears like very, very far spectrum and talk about loss prevention, right? So Five Below, this is like one of my go-tos. I hit up Five Below at least like once a year. This is like the stocking stuffer central. If your parents like need a tip, this is like the place to go, right? Well, they're joining other retailers and they're thinking about self-checkout and how does this affect obviously their their loss. And so they scaled up their self-checkouts for a while because they were saying, hey, this is going to help us with our staffing, like our staff can be in other parts of the store helping clients do things. What they saw is that even though it did help them in some aspects, it actually led to more loss, right? And so I think that now they're rethinking this along with some other retailers, and they're saying, hey, they're complaining about like organized retail crime. That's through the roof, obviously, like, theft and just like not paying for items is continuing to escalate. And so they tested a lot of shrink mitigation initiatives in the third and fourth quarter last year, and really, including posting more guards, but really scaling the self-checkout back is what had the most impact, and having more associates at the front of the store really proved to be the most effective in fighting inventory loss. I think that this is like interesting because we're all like, yes, self-checkout. There's other retailers that are following suit. Dollar General has boosted its front-end staffing, and Target now, I know this, I just went to Target yesterday. You can only have 10 items or less in self-checkout. It's the bane of my existence to stand in that line for longer now. But here we are. So I think that it's interesting. There's also a recent study that was done at the University of Leicester in England, and estimated that self-checkout in the US and elsewhere caused between one-fifth and nearly one-quarter of all unknown store loss. Lost merchandise from self-checkout is obviously causing more shrinkage than the organized retail crime that we may be more accustomed to. So I think this is like going back to like what service looks like in a store and how it should operate. And obviously, like, things are expensive right now, people are probably stealing more because we've got some crazy inflation happening. So I think that, figuring out what works for the store and helps with the loss prevention, but also helps with the experience, it has to be a good balance. So we'll have to keep an eye on this one with Five Below.
For sure. And I think that I mean, it's not a problem unique to Five Below, right? I think people are, self-checkout technologies were a big rave. Like everybody, in the retail space, was testing them out, deploying them, cutting staff and, kind of switching over to this. And I think, here at, from a personal point of view, I go to, the grocery store, or I go to the local, dollar stores here, and they've got the self-checkout technologies, but at the door they all have now like security guards standing there, or kind of like in a Costco-like way, like show me your receipts and checking you on the way out. And so, like, to me it kind of defeats itself, right? Because if you have to pay somebody to stand there to check a receipt, you might as well have somebody running a cashier, right? And so I get it, but there and I know, the theft is real, and people are, these brands are losing a lot of money. And it's not just, like I said, Five Below. I mean, you talked about Target. Walmart's also announced that they're reducing self-checkout hours at some of their locations. They're setting up, separate lanes for Walmart Plus customers now. Dollar General, they're pulling self-checkout completely out of 300 stores and limiting it to, five items or less at the other, 4,500 stores that they have. So I think it's a problem, right? And yet I think it also creates opportunity for some of the other, sort of, let's call it automated checkout technologies, things like Amazon's Just Walk Out technology, or things like that, where, it's a little more controlled, in the sense that you're not relying on the customer, to scan every item. It's automatically all scanned, and everything's kind of tracked, from the shelf movement to the, what's in their basket as they walk out the door, and how it's built. So, in some ways, I think, that may kind of, put more fuel behind, what Amazon and other, Standard Cognition and some of these other companies that are doing with these types of technology, more on the biometric side of things as well. So, we'll see, but for sure, it's sometimes, the technology sounds great, and and people are quick to deploy it, and they realize that, that we have to backtrack a little bit. So, all right, final story now. So we're going to talk about a new technology called Floor Locator, and this is a new method that's been developed. I guess patent pending method for indoor navigation and wayfinding type of technology. So it's a technical story, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But basically, it takes Wi-Fi scans and then organizes them in a graphing model. It basically takes it's relying on Wi-Fi scans, so not unique there in that there's lots of indoor technology that uses Wi-Fi sensors or hotspots, and then builds a path analytics map from the interaction between mobile devices and those Wi-Fi networks within a building. What they are doing here, and they say it's this is about increasing accuracy and scalability of the way that this is done, and sort of the triangulation between these these Wi-Fi points, is that they integrate something called spiking neural networks, SNNs, with graph neural networks, GNNs, all of which is way too complex for me. Basically, it maps out these access points and then creates a dynamic graph, to kind of help, with this real-time positioning. And they say it's at least 10% higher accuracy in complex multi-floor buildings than anything else on the market today. I look at this and I go, okay, in our world, in retail, and things like that, grocers and Walmarts and Targets and so on, I don't know that this is a problem that they're clamoring to be solved today. I think there's good indoor navigation technology on the market today. You have computer vision technologies out there, that I think are doing some pretty interesting things. You have other technologies, like I said, that are using Wi-Fi triangulation, using Bluetooth technologies, that are using magnetic positioning or smart lighting systems. So there's a lot out there. You have co companies like Retail Next, and others that are, I think, doing interesting things in the space. To me, this is I'm interested to understand, who do they think like the ideal customer is for this? Like, where is this extra 10% accuracy important? Because I don't it for me, it's not in the retail sector today. I think having the accuracy that we have today with a lot of these technologies is interesting. I think what's a bigger problem today is the effort it takes to map a property, and how long that takes and how often you have to do that, to kind of set the base map for what you're sort of matching against. And so I'm intrigued to know a little bit about this, but and I need to, just full transparency, I need to learn what a spiking neural network and a graph neural network are, first of all. I don't know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think spiking neural network sounds like something that brings me back to like the pandemic, you know? Like it should be like incorporated into like a vaccine or the CDC is talking about it. I don't know. But honestly, I agree with you. I agree with your sentiment in terms of, is there a true problem to be solved here in the marketplace? And I'm not sure that there is. I'm not sure that the biggest pain point that a big box retailer or a shopping center has is the fact that they need 10% more accuracy with their wayfinding. I don't think that's the case. I think that as you mentioned, like there's incredibly long setup time and care time, service time for a lot of these like mapping technologies. And I just don't think that in terms of ROI, it's always there, right? The amount of shoppers that actually engage and utilize in-store mapping or shopping wayfinding type of a service or technology is probably pretty slim compared to the expense that it takes and just the overhead and setup time. So I agree that. Is there a true market challenge, or are you just, improving technology for technology's sake? Always exciting to see that there's new ways of doing things. I'd like to see other use cases where this applies.
There you go.
So.
And feel free to reach out to us, by the way, Floor Locator people. I definitely legitimately want to learn more about this and, get a better understanding of what that entails in terms of the technology itself, and where you guys see the use cases. So, Don't take our word only for it. Feel free to let us know where we're wrong or what we should be looking at. So, all right, well, that's our show for this week. Just to wrap up, though, I want to make a quick mention again of the upcoming Retail Loco conferences. We will be in Europe April 11th and 12th in Munich at the Munich airport for Retail Loco there. So please join us for that. A lot of great conversations will be had, as is always done, with some of our biggest members across the pond in Europe. And then we will be just a week and a half after that in Minneapolis at the Mall of America for Retail Loco US side. And we've got some great speakers there. Target will be sharing some insights. Kroger, Sleep Number, a bunch of other like smaller local retailers to the Minneapolis area as well, sharing some insights on kind of what's going on small medium business way and how they're leveraging some of this technology. We've got discussions on last mile, on real-time ad targeting, metaverse, and all sorts of everything in between. So I encourage you to get involved with both of those conferences. You can go to the lbma.org and just click on the event section to get your tickets for that. And worst case scenario, you get to, even if you're not interested in any of that, you can come hang out with me and Karsten, and maybe Aubriana will be there. You never know. So things can happen. So, but check it out. But we thank you for your time, for listening, for watching. We'll be back next week with another show, of course. And until then, have a great one. Bye.
Bye.